Two summers ago, I was browsing an art store in Arizona when I spotted Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud. Yes, I enjoy comics, but I wouldn't really call myself well-versed. The extent of my collection is a few anthologies of my favorite funnies. But I've always loved browsing comics when they're in my vicinity, so I did just that, and was immediately hooked. I bought the book, and it transformed my understanding of, well, art in general. My focus is music, and as I came to understand the theories and practices that help drive effective comics art, I continuously found myself considering parallels in the world of sound. Scott McCloud's mad mind helped me find a theorist hiding in me too. And I could go on about the many thoughts that that book stirred in me, but right now, I just want to share what comics art has taught me about the role rendering plays in an audience's investment in a story, and how it can be applied to music. Our identities, along with the emotions, thoughts, memories, and opinions that have defined them, belong permanently to what McCloud calls the realm of the concept. They're merely ideas, and completely impalpable. Even our perception of our appearance is conceptual. After all, most of us aren't able to maintain a vividly detailed image of ourselves in our minds. The most we can do is recall the general placement of our features. Our faces are vividly detailed, but the vivid details are lost to our minds. Ultimately, in our own conceptual world, we appear as abstractions of our actual appearance, and to us, these abstractions represent our physical identity. And this premise is something that artists can work with to engage our minds. An artist can choose to portray a character in any number of ways, but by rendering them simply, as with a cartoon, they more closely resemble our own perceived images of ourselves. So, as McCloud says in his book, quote, "When you enter the world of the cartoon, you see yourself. The cartoon is a vacuum into which our identity and awareness are pulled, an empty shell that we inhabit, which enables us to travel in another realm. We don't just observe the cartoon, we become it." End quote. This process, which McCloud calls the masking effect, is a means by which artists encourage us to share our identities with the characters in their stories. It can make it feel as if the things happening to them are affecting us directly, or it can at least make it easy to empathize with them. Regardless, this effect is a fuel for our personal investment in the narrative. Sound, as it happens, is a medium into which the masking effect is inherently built. In his 1936 autobiography, Igor Stravinsky says that he, quote, "considers that music is, by its very nature, essentially powerless to express anything at all, whether a feeling, an attitude of mind, a psychological mood, a phenomenon of nature, etc. Expression has never been an inherent property of music. That is by no means the purpose of its existence. If, as is nearly always the case, music appears to express something, this is only an illusion and not reality. It is simply an additional attribute which, by tacit and inveterate agreement, we have lent it, thrust upon it, as a label, a convention, in short, an aspect which, unconsciously or by force of habit, we have come to confuse with its essential being." End quote. A major chord is never inherently happy. A melody is never inherently sad. Nothing about music itself is inherently expressive at all. But that is not to say that it doesn't have a role to play in expression. Like Stravinsky says, expression is a quality that we as people lend to music. It isn't expressive, but it's a medium through which we express, artists and listener alike. As with the cartoon, the things we listen to act as vessels that we fill with our own identities. We say that what we're listening to has a given emotional quality, not because it inherently does, but because it holds a magnifying glass to particular emotions that we are already experiencing in our lives. I think this happens when qualities of the music reflect aspects of our psychological and physiological states. For example, a song with a steadfast beat might make an effective workout song because it augments the listener's feelings of determination. How does it do this? Well, it doesn't create determination from nothing, but by mirroring the steady pace that the listener intends for their own physical exertion, the music focuses their attention on maintaining that pace. Because qualities of the music are personally relevant, the listener can actually identify with it. In turn, it becomes an extension of themselves. And so, if the music is keeping that intended pace, so are they. Alternatively, if the listener weren't already determined to some degree, the music wouldn't be so personally relevant. It would still raise a magnifying glass to that emotional area, but it wouldn't have anything to magnify. That said, music, as with other mediums, is highly dependent on context for its listeners to identify with what they're hearing. If they have had no prior exposure to certain symbols or environments, they just won't fully understand it. This consideration for context is particularly important when using sound to tell a story. Whether it's rendered simply or realistically, sound is inherently abstracted, a far cry from the thing it's meant to represent. Without our other senses to substantiate the identity of what we're sensing with our ears, we can only ascertain a fragment of the picture, and it's up to us to fill in the rest with the context we have. Take birdsong, for example. To tell that we're listening to a bird, first we need to know what a bird even is, and that it makes that kind of noise. To tell what bird it is specifically, we also need exposure to that specific kind of bird. Then there's the matter of what the bird symbolizes, which varies from culture to culture. And of course, the bird might have a unique personal meaning from individual to individual. For better and worse, this ambiguity is built into the medium. Of course, since the interpretation of sound is so variable, important bits of the greater narrative can get lost in translation. For instance, imagine the listener didn't realize they were hearing a bird. If the presence of that bird were meant to hint that the setting is outdoors, that perhaps important detail would be lost on them. Though, in spite of that possibility, I do not think ambiguity is actually a weakness here, for two reasons. First, it drives the artist to seriously consider the background of their intended audience and how that background might affect the way their art is interpreted. By prioritizing audience in their creative process, they can inventively design the listening experience around what their audience does and doesn't know. Second, and more excitingly, this absence of detail, this simple rendering, is just sound acting like its cousin, the cartoon. Because our ears only give us a fragment of the picture, it's up to our imaginations to fill in the rest. As with the cartoon, the ambiguity rouses us to participate, to actively contribute to the art. And as a consequence of the unique context with which we each approach sound and music, the filled-in pictures we imagine are individualized, inevitable reflections of our own lives. So, to recap, there are two interconnected ways that sound and music appeal to the conceptual world within us to encourage our personal investment in a piece. First, by virtue of the medium's inherent ambiguity, sound, no matter how realistic, is always an abstraction of the thing it represents. And consequently, there is always an incomplete picture for the listener to fill in using the context they've gathered from what they've learned and experienced in their own lives. This is especially relevant when using sound to paint a scene or tell a story. Second, by shifting away from realism and rendering their music simply and representationally, artists prompt their listeners to concentrate less on what they quote-unquote see in the picture and more on what they feel. When musical elements like tempo, rhythm, dynamics, and harmony reflect aspects of the listener's state of being, as with the aforementioned workout music example, it can seriously feel as if the music is augmenting that emotional experience. Both instances invite the listener to lend identity to what they're hearing, and without them, the music would be completely inanimate. We, as people, give it life and meaning. And by choosing to experiment in this world of sonic cartooning, we as artists might just connect with our listeners a bit more intimately than before.